topics on the agenda. First of all, regarding the working group within the CCNSO, looking at retirement, delegation, redelegation, and retirement. And then we're going to talk a bit about geographic names, and then a bit of an update regarding the CCIDN policy development process. And then we'll go from there. So I think, Keith, it's over to you to talk about the working group. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. For those who don't know me, my name's Keith Davidson, and I'm chairing the CCNSO Delegations, Redelegations Working Group. And to my left is Bernie Turcott, who has been contracted by ICANN to provide support to the working group and has done the substantial research and recording of the working group's progress. We've got a presentation that we made to the CCNSO yesterday, at the risk of boring the CC TLD people in the room, we'll go through that presentation again. But just prior to starting the presentation, I wondered if we could perhaps have a show of hands in the room as to who has read the Delegation Redelegation Working Group reports. There are four reports on the website at the moment. Can we have a look? So we can assume that there's a reasonable knowledge about the subject, both within the GAC and within the CCNSO. Okay, thanks, Bernie. Can we have next slide? Just what we'll do is run through what the working group was mandated to do, the summary of the progress report, and then I'll hand over to Bernie to cover off on the final reports and the final draft reports on retirement, delegation and redelegation where the incumbent operator consented, then just a quick roadmap for the working group's work ahead. Next slide, please. Of course, the working group was established by CCNSO Council to look into whether or not there should be a policy development process relating to delegations, redelegations and retirements of CCTLDs. We undertook a substantial amount of research, initially looking at the policies that currently apply. So we looked at RFC 1591, ICANN's ICP1, and News Memo 1, and the GAC Principles 2000 and the GAC Principles 2005. We analysed those policies and guidelines to measure whether there were any gaps or in those policies, and really found nothing of major concern. We then measured all delegation, redelegation and retirement decisions by ICANN that were publicly available and measured those against a matrix of whether they complied with policy and guidelines or were outside of those policies and guidelines, and then measured those issues as to how significant they were to warrant further investigation. Of course, the IANA functions that relate to the US government and ICANN agreement have been beyond the scope of this working group, so they've not been an issue that we've investigated. Next slide, please. The issues paper we released in Brussels for public comment a substantial document that listed all of the delegations, redelegations, and retirements, and included the note of what we found significantly interesting, of interest, and not really of any significant concern. And we then divided our work into the four separate categories of retirement, delegation, redelegation with consent, and redelegation without consent. It's our intention to bring those four subtopics back into a common single report as our final report. And we plan to complete the working group work you know, around the San Francisco ICANN meeting time. Next slide, please. And I'll hand over to Bernie to talk about the individual reports. Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. These are a listing from the main reports. Each of those reports are available online individually, and if you do have interest, the links will be listed at the end of this presentation, and this presentation will be on the CCNSO website. Right now, we will only deal with the issues for the three reports that have been posted. The first report is on the retirement of CCTLDs. The main issues are: there is no policy regarding the retirement of CCTLDs. That's just the basic reality of the situation. There is significant divergence between the approach to the retirement of .TP and .YU. There's a statement by Peter Dengue Trush regarding the 2007 YU decisions. The September 2009 board minutes relating to extending the period for retiring .YU contain some text of interest from the RNIDS that asked ICANN for better guidance for future on how the process of retiring country code top level domains should be conducted in the form of clear and transparent rules. So you don't have to read a lot between those lines. The issue of what happens if the manager is not in agreement with retiring a CCTLD that is no longer listed as an active ISO 3166 code is not addressed. Application of the practices appeared inconsistent when considering the .su.tp cases, which have been removed from active ISO 3166 lists for years. The recommendation is rather simple and did not take much debate from our working group, and it is that the DRD working group recommends that the CCNSO undertake a PDP on the retirement of CCTLDs. And yes, my daughter has just logged on to Skype. The final report on delegations. The issues: failure to consistently follow established policies, processes, and procedures. Lack of predictability in the application of current rules and procedures to the delegation of CCTLDs. The applicability of ICP1. This one is a subset of a longer issue, but no publicly documented process or procedure for updating IANA processes and procedures that apply to CCTLDs. IANA reports need to be clear on what has been provided for community support, how it has been evaluated, and if it meets the requirements or not. And there are several inconsistencies in terminology. It was rather universal that CCTLD operators despised being referred to as the organization.
Sponsoring
organization, yes. So I think that just appeared, and we were told that we were sponsoring organizations, and people sort of resent that. The recommendation is a little long. It is the same for the two last reports, and I will go through it in detail because we believe... All right, maybe I won't go through it.
No, you can.
It's just the lights in here.
Okay. I guess it's momentous.
It was John Postel.
He's everywhere.
The DRD Working Group have conducted research on the ICANN decisions relating to the delegations and redelegations of CCTLDs and believe the research highlights decisions made that contain elements of inconsistent application of policies, guidelines, and procedures, and on occasions that ICANN decisions have been based on criteria not included in the relevant policies, guidelines, and procedures. The decisions of the ICANN board should be logical and predictable. Although elements of this report support a recommendation for the CCNSO to undertake a PDP, this working group notes the considerable time requirement to develop a PDP, along with the urgent need to provide clarification of various issues and procedures within ICANN, and therefore, for reasons of expediency, efficiency, effectiveness, and flexibility, recommends a two-step process to the CCNSO Council. The ARD Working Group recommends that As a first step, the CCNSO Council undertake the development of a framework of interpretation for the delegation of CCTLDs. This framework should provide a clear guide to IANA and the ICANN board on interpretations of the current policies, guidelines, and procedures relating to the delegations of CCTLDs. The results of the use of such a framework of interpretation should be formally monitored and evaluated by the CCNSO Council after a predetermined period. If the results of this evaluation indicate that the framework of interpretation failed to provide logical and predictable outcomes in ICANN decision-making, the CCNSO Council should then launch a PDP on the delegation of CCTLDs. So this is our approach for delegations. On the redelegation of CCTLDs with the consent of the incumbent operator, this introduces the fact that the fourth and final report will be on the redelegation of CCTLDs without the consent of the incumbent operator, and is probably one of the most complex ones, I would say, and has the most number of issues. And we are doing very well on that, and hope to have it out early in the new year at the latest. The issues on redelegations of CCTLDs with the consent of the incumbent operator: lack of fair and consistent application of ICANN bylaws applying to minutes of board meetings, failure to consistently follow established policies, processes, and procedures, the lack of predictability in the application of current rules and procedures to the redelegation of CCTLDs, the applicability of ICP1.
Actually, it'd be fairer to say the lack of applicability of ICP1 in a way.
The documents themselves describe these issues in great detail if you have interest in this. Issues continued. There is no publicly documented process or procedure for updating IANA processes and procedures that apply to CCTLDs. And what we've seen in the past is brand new rules and procedures just simply showing up on the website without even notifying people that they have changed significantly. So that is of slight concern. Interpretation of consent by IANA's own admission is highly variable depending on a number of factors, including culture and the immediate physical security of the CCTLD manager. So we are talking about redelegations of CCTLDs with consent, but exactly what consent means is a highly variable thing. Definition is required for what constitutes significantly interested party and community support. That's a recurring theme, certainly an issue in the redelegation of CCTLDs with the consent of the incumbent operator, and relates to the request from April 2010 by the ICANN board to the CCNSO to require the CCNSO to clarify what community support really means and how that should be interpreted. And we had come to that same conclusion. The recommendation is basically a carbon copy of the one we had before. It's a two-step process where we recommend the establishment of a framework of interpretation for the redelegation of CCTLDs where there is consent of the incumbent operator, monitoring after the fact for a set period, and if it does not meet the requirements, then the recommendation is that the CCNSO Council should recommend the launch of a policy development process on this particular set of policies. That concludes the reports, and over to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Bernie. And so, as I stated earlier, and as Bernie just mentioned, the report on the fourth of the four reports on redelegations without consent of the incumbent operator, work has progressed on that very steadily, and I think the working group has reached consensus on all but a couple of very fine points. So it was just a little bit too much of a rush to try and get that through in time for this meeting. But I could say with some surety that the redelegations without the consent of the operator report will include the same resolution as the delegations and redelegations report. The three reports and this fourth report will be available for a little while yet for consultation. So if you have comments, the reports are on the website and include an email address for your comments on them. What we're looking to do is consolidate those comments into a final report, bringing the four reports together and producing that final report for a final round of full public consultation with a view to having a final report to the final agreed report that everyone has accepted to the San Francisco meeting. The working group has been working steadily and has achieved consensus on everything that has been published to date and is continuing to work very expediently and reasonably quickly, and this working group may finish its work ahead of time. So that's the report, and we're struggling to currently get this PowerPoint presentation online, but it does contain the links to the various reports, and also if you have any issues that you want to raise, emailing me would be appropriate, but if you want to provide formal input to the reports, please use the email addresses listed in the individual reports. Thank you, and are there any questions?
Stefano.
Hey, thank you. Stefano Trumpi from Italy. The question is what you foresee after San Francisco? What follow on in the ICANN procedures, and which kind of agreement there is with the staff/board? Because this is quite interesting.
This working group's work is purely to come up with a series of recommendations to the CCNSO Council on whether or not there should be a PDP. As to the suggestion of the framework of interpretation and the consideration of the recommendation that there should be a PDP on retirements, that becomes the property and decision of the CCNSO Council at that point. So the shape and form of that will be over to Chris.
Stefano, if you assume for the moment that by San Francisco or shortly thereafter the report is finalised, the next step would be for the Council to consider the recommendations. If you assume that the Council accepts the recommendations, then the next step would be to form a structure to come up with the framework of interpretation. It is certainly the intention of the working group, and I would be surprised if it wasn't the intention of the Council, that we would seek a significant GAC involvement in whatever the structure is to work on that framework. But what shape it's going to take and et cetera, I don't know. It will probably be a joint and another one of those glorious joint working groups that we love so much.
If I can add, I see some, let's call it supervision of the IANA function in a way. So it's something that has to be harmonized in the ICANN framework as globally, I think.
I agree with that. I just wanted to make, if I may, Keith, I just wanted to make one point personally. It's very easy reading these recommendations on their own, and in fact it's very easy if reading the report as a whole, to take the view that this is all very negative, and that would not be a fair view. We're not suggesting that anyone's being negligent or bad, it's a function of working with the tools that the ICANN board has been given. It's a function of the fact that a lot of this stuff was written a long time ago. It's a function of the fact that the GAC principles, for example, are very useful, are a series of high-level statements that don't necessarily provide detail. So the board is doing, we think, the best it can do in the circumstances, but so I wouldn't want anyone to think that this is in any way saying that things have gone wrong. It's not an indictment on the board. I'm conscious of that because I've had some feedback on the AT from people who are perhaps less acclimatised to the ICANN environment as we are, that the ATRT report, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team report, could be perceived as being very negative. So it shouldn't be, and this certainly isn't intended to be. Keith.
Hi, Frank March, New Zealand. My question actually was directed exactly at the point which you've sort of almost answered, but not completely, and that is that there was this question of consistency of approach and failure to follow procedures and so on. And I appreciate what you've just said, Chris, but I wonder if those comments have been made to the AT, the Accountability Transparency Review Team, and if there have been any comments back from the review team about that, because you could probably observe that point about a number, if not many, of the decisions that have been made by ICANN over the years.
Okay, are we talking about the ATRT now, or are we talking about the delegation, redelegation?
I'm talking about the observation about failure to follow process.
Okay. Well, I'm in the context of this, Dell and Redell, at least in part, there is a lack of process to follow in the first place. And so, therefore, precedent gets created by what you did last time. The fact that you've been able to do that gives you almost automatically a feeling of license to kind of meander the path rather than following a specific process. That's not to say that there aren't occasions where real specific processes are not necessarily followed. So on that side of things, I think yes, the message is delivered. In respect, just very quickly, in respect to the ATRT, again, I would say yes, that's understood.
Yes, Thomas Daan from the Netherlands. I don't yet grasp the idea of the framework of interpretations. I mean, we have three documents which are leading. We know this, and we have the ENA doing a process, getting guidance by these three documents. Will this fourth document be another guidance, or will it be, let's say, determinative about certain actions they do? I don't get quite the idea.
Again, I think that's an issue that the CCNSO will have to grapple with. I mean, one possibility, just plucking a possibility out of the sky, might be that the CCNSO may ask the GAC to revisit the GAC principles 2005, or somehow come up with a series of clarifications or statements that give some colour and depth to the GAC principles that the CCNSO and the GAC might jointly agree on and point towards the ICANN board as a set of advice from the two communities as one possibility. And I think trying to second guess what that might look like now is probably a little difficult, and it needs some discussion before we get to that point.
I can just take an example, Thomas. I think everyone pretty much accepts the concept of local community support. The problem is that there is no explanation anywhere really of what that looks like. What colour is it? How deep is it? What does it mean? To take that as an example, the goal would be for this document, which would be a document that would hopefully be embraced by the GAC as well as the CCNSO, to provide some meat on that bone of community support, for example. Then the next question that arises is, what is the status of that document? And the answer to that is that it is guidance, hopefully from all of those involved. The reason why there's a supplementary recommendation that says, and if that doesn't work, have a PDP, is in case that doesn't work. We would certainly hope that if we could reach agreement, consensus, if you like, on a series of frameworks of interpretation, that they would be taken very seriously, and that they would be used by ICANN and IANA. But we're conscious that may not be the case, and that's why we've put in the thing about the PDP. Is that okay, Maria?
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for the presentation. It was very interesting. Even I haven't been able to dug into all this material, but apparently you're covering a lot of very interesting and important issues. I mean, it's also very much connected to different procedures. That's something we've been discussing in the GAC also. But I have a little bit of a curious question. Maybe it's totally irrelevant or maybe even stupid, but I go for it anyway. Of course, you've been focusing, of course, on the CCTLDs, but do you see the mutual problems or issues or if you see in the other TLDs on the procedural basis?
No, absolutely not. We haven't looked at any of anything outside of the CCTLD arena at all. But no, not a silly question. And something that we'd never contemplated. This is an issue for the CCNSO, so we've only restricted ourselves to our arena.
Arnulf and Janta.
Yes, it's Arnulf Storm from Norway. Yes, thank you very much for this presentation. I think it looks very interesting. And just a quick observation, I think when it comes to the framework of interpretation, I think that's at least that is a stage that I think the GAC would like to sort of be involved somehow to be part of the interpretation at least of our own principles. So I think that's, as you described, Chris, that when it comes to that stage, then of course we have to find a mechanism of how to be involved, and I think that's a very good point here with the information exchange here that we actually get this information at this stage, and then we can plan how to be active and be involved where it's appropriate. Thank you.
Just in response, we have had two GAC observers on our working group all the way through, Suzanne and Jayantha, and I have to say they've been more useful than being observers by providing us indications at times of some useful ways forward for us. So the cooperation has been extremely good, and we would look to harness that energy, I'm sure, for the future.
Just occurs to me also that I would expect that this whatever this structure is that we use to come up with this is obviously also going to involve IANA. I mean, we need to involve the people who do the stuff because they will have hurdles that they know about that we don't necessarily understand. So that's another point. Janta, and then Suzanne, and then Bill.
Thank you. Janta Fernando from Sri Lanka. Firstly, I'd like to thank the working group for an excellent outcome, which in a way sets a tone of the work that we may have in hand in relation to the CCTLD principles in future, if we are going to review that. So in that context, I'm very thankful. Just a quick clarification, something that I have not understood perhaps clearly in this process, is whether this would have an impact on the IDN CCTLDs, how will there be any correlationship between this and that?
Well, yes, in the sense that the IDN CCTLDs go through a delegation process, and presumably one day there might be one that goes through a redelegation process. But in the sense of the policy for IDNs, no, because the IDN policy development process doesn't deal with the IANA function. The IANA function is the IANA function. So the IDN PDP stops at the point where you make your your delegation request. Okay, Suzanne.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Keith. I just wanted to note that it's been a very interesting opportunity as one of the observers to participate and to chime in when appropriate. And I think it just we will remain in very close contact, hopefully, so that we get a sense of a trigger point, if you will, when we need to set up a small group. Obviously, the way the GAC works, everything is open to everybody, but de facto, it'll boil down to a small group to revisit, to re-examine the 2005 GAC principles to be in line with some of what you would be considering. So we just have to keep ourselves very close on the calendar. But I think, again, I expect it'll be a very constructive and productive working relationship. Thank you.
Do you want to say that? You don't want to, another compliment back for us? Bill.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a stupid question. Has there been any discussion in the working group about why it's necessary to retire CCTLDs just because the relevant country doesn't exist anymore? I mean, is there what's the problem that's caused by just leaving them in the route? Presumably they have, many of them have, a number of registrants, actually, and while they continue to have registrants and maybe even gather new registrants, are there technical problems caused by leaving them in the route? Thank you.
That is a question that the working group did battle with. The issue is that the country code may be reissued by ISO on the ISO 3166 list, and at the point of some of the decisions of retirement, the ISO reissuance of a country code could have happened pretty much at any time. Now ISO has a clearer policy that usually a CC, a country code on the ISO 3166 list won't be reissued for a period of 50 years after its retirement. So we have attached to our retirement report some information from ISO on that, which in the policy development process may lead to a 50-year extension or something like that for the existing registrants or whatever's happening with the retirement. But I think retirements are difficult when numbers of registrants are declining and perhaps there's no willing registry operator and issues like that as well. So it's a complex issue and the PDP will not be a five-minute job. If there's no other questions, can I make the observation that the Delegations and Redelegations Working Group is meeting on Thursday at 11 a.m. for an hour in Commission 2A and B. And so any GAC members who are very fascinated by this may want to come along and... one of the subjects we'll be discussing is consent and informed consent. So if you're interested, please come along. And in terms of other CCNSO groups, working groups that are having meetings, on Thursday in room 161 from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m, the CCNSO Geographic Regions Working Group is meeting, and in previous interactions with the GAC, there's been some interest from some GAC members in the ICANN Geographic Regions. So if anyone's interested, that meeting is on too. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. I think you've heard today that GAC members are quite interested in how things develop following that report, so we look forward to working with you on that. Now we can move, I think, to the next topic for this afternoon, and that is on the issue of geographics. So I will turn to Hubert, my German colleague, to talk about, I guess, where the GAC is at in terms of outstanding issues related to geographics, and we will ask the CCNSO for their perspective, because I think we share some of the same concerns regarding new GTLDs. So please, Hubert.
Yes, thank you. Yes, as we all know, there's a question of introducing geographic names into the new GTLD world was discussed a long time when it was within the GAC. I recall that 2007, the GAC principles already mentioned that ICANN should avoid territory or places name, country, territory, or regional language or people descriptions unless in agreement with the relevant government or public authorities. This principle already stands for us, and we want procedures that safeguard these principles. We have been discussing for quite a long time whether we should introduce a list and what extent a list can be defined for a certain protection mechanism. We have decided now, or we are in a situation that there is a consensus that geographic names or the use of geographic names needs non-objection letter from the relevant government. That is something we welcome. Having that said, the problem is, as I mentioned before, we started to talk on a list and realized that it is difficult to have an extensive list, exhaustive list, including everything that might be considered a geographic name. And then we now have, according to the discussion with GNSO and ICANN board, a list that is more or less consists of the country names, the full country names, subdivisions of the countries, that is provinces, federal states. Then we have a third category, the cities, and then as fourth, it's UN regions, it's bigger regions. ICANN board offered in a letter to the GAC that they see a second avenue for other geographic names or geographic names that we think are not considered in this list, the community objection process. And we see this community objection process as it is now designed a bit complicated. The problem is the objection is, as it is now, is the first step for litigation. And that means that we are discussing if the applicant states a counter objection that is rather likely after having applied, paid almost $200,000, and he normally will give a counter objection to a community objection, and then there will be a decision of a panel, and that is probably quite costly. And that's we have as GAC the position that GAC members and governments should be excluded from fees generally. In this question, there is still discussion with the board whether this is necessary. The second major problem we see is the criteria which are to be met for objecting, under which the panel will decide whether objection has is funded. Say one of these issues or criteria is, for example, that there is a damage or detriment. We see that is ex ante quite difficult to anticipate, because we may see a list in a published by ICANN where it's mentioned that there is an application for a city name. We may see it's a standard application, and then anticipate some damage for the community. It's really difficult to know what will happen, And a second step is necessary that the community is targeted. That's also a question I cannot answer without knowing in detail what is TLD is designed. You have really know in detail what is the design of the TLD, what are the registration policies, and you also have to see that these may not be changed during time, and they may not be changed and end up in a geographic TLD, and therefore this is this process quite difficult, and I think that it would need to be reviewed in this context. And as it stands, the procedure for geographical names that are not on this list, we think it's more conflict orientated and not consensus orientated, the process. I think we should find ways that are softer, that we don't start with a litigation, but try to find means where governments and applicants can communicate in a soft form, not in a start with a legal confrontation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hubert. Is there anything that the CCNSO might wish to ask or comment on?
I have a couple of things I'd like to ask. I just wanted to check in with Annabeth, who's hiding over there. Did you want to say anything? Okay. I've had numerous conversations over the last couple of days with people about this issue. And it's got so many different bits to it, it's actually quite hard to kind of, get clarity on it. The situation gets confused because people end up talking about objection processes, and there are objection processes for all GTLDs, whereas this is a conversation about geographic names. So the first point I would make is that there's nothing to say that the same process has to apply across everything. So you could take place names, geographic names, whatever you want, whatever the right word is, and use it and say, whilst if governments want to object to .gay, that's one thing, and you go down an objection process. But if you're talking about a geographic name, that's a separate thing, and that should be treated, that you could argue should be treated differently. What's your solution to the point of if you go beyond a list, you then get into an argument about what is a name, what is actually considered to be a name that would fit under the criteria of geographic. What do you say, how do you say we should deal with that? That because if you go beyond the list, Holland, for example, sorry, Thomas, is not on the list as far as I'm aware. If you wanted to use a special mechanism that said that the country can object, or it shouldn't even be out there in the first place because it's on a reserved list or whatever you want to call it, how do you deal with what you put on there? Do you have solutions for that?
Yes, may I? Yes, that is exactly the problem. I understand our role in EGAC not to design these procedures. I think we are in the first line. We listen to the procedures we are offered from ICANN, and we read with interest the new guidebook, and we can state that we are not able to accept it. And maybe what you mentioned in respect to objection processes, that we find some. New form of objection on a geographic in respect of geographic names, that would be a solution we could surely agree upon, and then I think this problem of .Holland would also be solved, Because if the government of the Netherlands had the chance to object to .Holland for free, I think then it would be rather simple to be integrated. Then I don't need the protection on the list. But the problem is really the objection process that is as it stands now.
But I understand, and thank you for the answer. I acknowledge that it's not your job to design the process, but it would be perhaps useful to know what in the broader context what you might the sort of things you might be satisfied with, which is not quite the same thing as designing the process. I wanted to pick up on what you said about Holland, because it seems to me that again this issue is getting complicated because there are two issues. My understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, my understanding is there are some governments who object to objecting, and then there are some governments who don't mind objecting but won't pay. Am I right? Are there some governments who are saying that even the concept of objecting is not acceptable, or is it just the money?
Suzanne, United States.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Chris. I don't think it's the issue of objecting to objecting. Why would we ever do that? No. Of course, you always have to retain your right to object to something. Of course. No, I don't mean to be flip, but to my knowledge, we have never actually heard that around the GAC table. It's the rather what appears to the GAC as a fairly rigid structure for objections that also comes with a hefty price tag, and that most governments really cannot anticipate whether they will consider a string to raise sensitivities. So if you cannot anticipate whether there will be one or 50 or 3,000, then you cannot put a line item in your budget to prepare you to write a check to ICANN or to the dispute, whatever, okay, blah-de-da. And so that whole process just seems to be completely out of whack with the fact that the GAC actually has a role to play in ICANN. And as one of my colleagues around the table puts it, the bylaws don't say that we can provide advice provided we write a check. So there is a sense, and I don't mean to be flippant here because this is actually a strongly held view, we are structured to provide advice, so we would like to see if they are willing to consider an upfront kind of quick look, some kind of prior review procedure so that you could tell at a glance. You would just know any country, the Netherlands would have that opportunity to see that, oops, somebody has applied for .Holland. You may decide that that's acceptable because of what they propose to do with it, and if they happen to be a Dutch national. You might feel otherwise if it was some other nationality or they intended to do silly things with your country name. So that is the idea. It would apply to any number of categories of strings, possibly. There could be some concerns about language or ethnicity or references to tribes. I mean, there could be any number. Religions, that's a pretty good one. There could be any number of potential strings that an applicant in some cases might not know that in some countries that proposed string is actually against the law and is prohibited from being registered at the second level. So if you had this kind of an opportunity, then you could either, certainly the applicant would then presumably have the opportunity to amend perhaps that string, knowing that it wouldn't run into opposition, but at least they would have a sense that there would be opposition. Instead, what the GAC has been struggling with on a number of issues, but particularly, you know, geographic names have been very, very visible, is that you'd have to wait until the objection. I mean, you have to file an objection to stop something. That's been the problem. I hope I've done justice to that. So I look to my colleagues to correct me if I have made any mistakes in this. Thank you.
Greece, did you want to speak? Please, go ahead.
No, just supplementing what Sue has said. The objection procedure is one procedure which is there. Some countries, mine included, feel that this should not be taken as a procedure which will replace GAC's advice procedure. GAC is an advisory committee and should keep being able to give advice to ICANN on those candidate strings, like Sue explained, because this can be done at a time before bilateral objection procedures take place, which are more serious, which if they can be avoided, it would be better at an earlier stage through the advice giving procedure of the GAC.
Thank you for that. Chris, did you want to quickly respond? Then I'll give the floor to Italy.
Thank you, Heather. I think I may be missing a link here. I've heard this from Peter a couple of times, and I don't think I understand. He has said he's not suggesting that if the GAC wants to object to whatever, that they should pay as the GAC. And I said to him this morning, but hold on a second. For the GAC to do that, to put in not an objection, but advice that you should not do this, the GAC has got to go through a monumental process. And the concept that you would be able to do that in the timelines required on anything other than an extraordinary one-off basis, I would have said, it's going to be pretty difficult. Is there something built into the process that gives you guys time to go away and think about stuff? I don't think there is.
Not that we know of.
No. So I had looked at it from the point of view of the number of times the GAC is likely to actually do something was actually relatively small, whereas individual countries may well, on lots of occasions, want to put their arm up in the air and say, hold on a minute, not happy about this. So that was why when you said it shouldn't take the place of GAC advice, I went, I didn't think it would, because the speed doesn't lend itself to, does it, to you guys doing that? I wouldn't have thought. Just a thought.
Thank you. I have Italy, Netherlands, and then European Commission, followed by Arab League of States. Okay.
Let me start from mentioning a letter of a minister, African minister, that is promoting .Africa in one of the new geographic GTLDs. And the end of the letter is that he won't guarantee that this name will not be used as a GTLD. Because otherwise the business sector will enter in and so and so. So the reason like that. So this lead me to a provocative question. Did you, as country code names, ever thought about representing rather geographical names? Okay. And some of the questions that we are mentioning here that are connected to names of the country, possible appeal against some of the geographical GTLDs that are ready to start. So is something that in any case creates, if you want, a link. And also country codes are country codes, but we have territories. Some of the territories are cities like Hong Kong or things like that. And we have also a regional that is .eu. So it is open the interpretation if you want. But this is a provocative question. Stop.
At this stage, Stefano, thank you. I think I'll just say no, we haven't spent any time thinking about whether we should make a land grab for regions and every other name you can think of. But in the case of .Asia, when that came up, There was a lot of discussion in the Asia-Pacific region about how we felt about that, and some people were massively in favour and some people were less in favour, but not in any other respect.
Thank you. Netherlands.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Well, I would concur very much with Hubert and Suzanne in what they said. I think that's the right approach, also, as Hubert said, that we are not designing the process. I mean, we are giving our big concern about certain things which could be against the public interest, and then it's up to the, let's say, the experts to design a beautiful process for this, I think. But let me add only one thing extra, which is, I mean, we are talking about Dot Holland, and, well, the Netherlands, we are here, and we can see the process, and we can, engage timely. But it's not, I think it's not about Dot Holland, it's about probably countries who are not here, or maybe not well-resourced in developing regions, which are not aware that their country name has been, can be taken by somebody else. So I think that's a thing we should be pretty much aware of. And I think I concur also with people who are saying that in the event, if the process is being very designed, very complicated with, let's say, amounts of money involved, also going into the conflict situation and litigation, then, of course, as GEC, we should also think, okay, if we have a certain case, we just give advice, which is for free, to the board or to during a process also, we give advice not to delegate a certain string. So that could be one of the consequences if there's not a good process. Thank you.
Thank you. Arab League of States.
Thank you. Actually, I'm sorry about raising that topic many times, but the Arab region was one of the six regions recently added to the DAG by the board resolution, and it was added as Arab states, which is actually how the UNESCO defines it. But regarding that term and regarding all other terms that have been added, those actually are very long terms. The list that was initially used, or the list that's used, the ISO list that's used, contained some sort of abbreviations or short terms for those regions. But those six regions does not. So we were wondering actually if there's going to be a process through which we can define short terms for the regions, because definitely we won't be interested in applying for like dot Arab states, or, and we need to protect dot Arab or dot Arabs or whatever terms that's relevant in that sense. Thank you.
Thank you for that. European Commission.
Thank you. Yes, I think it's really important to stress actually that this is quite a key issue, and it's not really about the money, actually, although I don't have a checkbook in the drawer of my desk at work. You know, I can't just take it out and write a check, actually, when somebody asks me for one. Those kind of things require budget lines and justification. But there's a point of principle here as well that, you know, the ICANN model is quite controversial, you may have noticed. You know, many of the governments who come here spend a lot of time defending it in other intergovernmental organizations. And then they have to go back and explain to their ministers why they have to do that. And then the next thing they have to tell them is that organization that they've been defending is telling them they have to pay to tell them they have a major public policy issue with an application. You know, that's a hard sell, to be honest, actually, and seems very counterproductive from ICANN's perspective. It really does, actually. I mean, if there's a, and it's not just the paying for an objection, it's the objection procedure. You know, if an application causes problems locally and Parliament gets excited and ministers get lots of letters about things and we're instructed to come here and say, actually, that's a really big problem for us, you know, subjecting ourselves to an independent panel which may consist of people who don't even come from our country and then go back and tell our minister, well, actually, somebody who doesn't even live here says it's okay and we should shut up. That's actually a problem. You know, practically that doesn't really, that's not sellable actually when you're in the lift going up to the minister's office, to be frank with you. On process, I'd also challenge it, actually. I don't think it's so difficult. It seems to me very easy. People apply for GTLDs. We look at the list, and those GAC members who have a problem say, that's a problem for me. And they explain why it's a problem for them. And then I'd suggest, actually, that the government and the applicant go off together and talk to each other, and they come back when they've got a solution, and they don't come back before then. Now, the reason I suggest that procedure is because I understand it's a procedure widely accepted by CCNSO members or in case of re-delegation. That's a long-established practice that you've defended, and I think we've defended, generally. So we have a precedent. I think you'd argue that it works, actually, and I think it could work for the GAC as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I agree with you. I had thought at one point you were talking about all names and you were going to send people off, but then I realised you were talking about geographic ones, and so thank goodness for that. I could have been, but no, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think that's a very simple and simple and straightforward solution that has the effect of doing what it does in CC land, which is shifting the problem somewhere else, and that works pretty well normally. I should tell you that I did have I did speak at the GNSO CCNSO council lunch yesterday, I think it was. Seems like a lifetime ago. And say to them that the subject, on the specific subject of country names, geographic names in the sense of countries, so Holland being an example, as opposed to on a list, that this was a major, major hurdle and sticking point for the CCNSO and for the GAC, and that it might be useful for them to think about how much it really matters to them. And if it really doesn't matter all that much, they should probably go to the board and say, stop faffing around and just give the GAC and the CCNSO what they want. I got a reasonable amount of kind of nods on that, I think, from people in the GNSO room who just went, yeah, maybe it doesn't matter all that much. Because if you actually think about it, have you heard the GNSO running around saying, no, we must have country names in it? I haven't. It just seems to be coming from the board. So maybe we can actually just kind of get the GNSO to accept that they don't need it, and then we can take the country names out of the equation, at least for this round, anyway.
Thank you, Chris. You would like to speak Nigeria.
Thank you. I just want to echo what Chris had just said. I thought that at Brussels, we came to terms with the fact that this round will not include the geographic names. I don't know whether we are reneging from that position that everybody agreed on. I think the GNSO was a joint meeting like this that I think there was a presentation that the geography names will not be considered at this round. So why do we want to go back to that?
Mary, it's because of the way it's being done. They are removed. Country names are removed from the first round, but only if they're on some sort of a list. I can't remember what it is now, which means that for the Holland example, it doesn't work, and there are plenty of other examples of that. In other words, it's too narrow an interpretation of what we mean by a geoname. So that's the issue, and that's why we're trying to get that sorted.
Thank you for that. We're reaching the end of our time. One last thing, if we could request a quick update on the progress with the CCIDN PDP effort. Our colleague Manal has been following that work, but unfortunately Manal is unable to join us here. So if you could just do that briefly, and then we can move to close. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. I'll be very quick because to go into it in any detail is massively complicated. But effectively, the IDN PDP, the CCTLD IDN PDP, has got two arms to it. The first arm is the policy for for IDNs, the delegation of IDNs. The second arm is what changes will need to be made to the structure of the CCNSO to cope with the fact that, as an example, it would be possible to have a country with two registries, two separate registries, and right now, two separate CCTLDs effectively, and right now our structure allows us to have one member per territory, so we need to try and figure out a way of handling that. So those are the two areas that we're looking at. They're both progressing reasonably well. In respect to the first one, which is probably sort of more critical from your point of view, the PDP itself, what we've done is we've taken the starting point of the fast track and said, first question, have we covered every step that needs to be covered in a normal delegation as opposed to a fast track delegation in the fast track? And then gone back to each one of those steps and said, should the rule that applied in the fast track apply in the PDP? And we're going through that process at the moment. So, for example, should it be only in an official language as it is defined in the fast track, or should it be different? We spend a fair bit of time on what is an IDN, and there is, fortunately now, there is a sort of accepted technical definition. And an IDN is basically any string in which there is at least one character that is not the 26 letters of the Latin alphabet and hyphens and whatever else it is. So if you have one character, if you have a character with an umlaut, or you have whatever, that character makes it an IDN. And that's the definition from somewhere or other. Bart can tell you, I can't remember. So what that means is that the IDN PDP does apply to extended ASCII character domain names. So if your country's name, or a meaningful representation of your country's name, is made up of six letters, one of which is extended ASCII, that makes it an IDN, and that is the definition that comes from the technical community. So we're working our way through the what flows from that, etc., etc. We're on track, but can I give you a date when we're likely to finish? No. We're very grateful for the input from Manal from a government point of view. It's incredibly important. And also, I know that she's been sharing information with you, and she's been getting feedback from some of you, and that's really great too.
Thank you for that, Chris. Are there any questions that GAC members have? Comments? No. Okay. All right. So with that, I thank again the CCNSO for joining us. It's always a pleasure. And we will see you at some point during the rest of the week in the corridors. So thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
For the GAC, we're meeting here at no later than 3:45, please.